Turning now to our reading, beginning with our interlude, Marx's 18th Brumaire, before returning to the chapter, Poisonous Pedagogy in Alice Miller's For Your Own Good. And as a preface, because the 18th Brumaire has been hailed as a masterful and prescient example of class analysis, I found myself asking, what makes a class analysis? And how can it be when the ones constructing the key struggles that come to define us and have led to our defeat up to now are in hiding? So let's think on that further. But I also want to give Marx's answer from a letter at the back in which he says, quote, "And now, as to myself, no credit is due to me for discovering the existence of classes in modern society or the struggle between them. Long before me, bourgeois historians had described the historical development of this class struggle, and bourgeois economists the economic anatomy of the classes. What I did that was new was to prove, one, that the existence of classes is only bound up with particular historical phases in the development of production, two, that the class struggle necessarily leads to the dictatorship of the proletariat, and three, that this dictatorship itself only constitutes the transition to the abolition of all classes and to a classless society." Unquote, from Marx's letter to J. Wedemeyer of March 5th, 1852. But what he did, I think, is to inject Hegel into our longing to be free. The Prussian king Frederick William did this before him, as we learned from Karl Popper, in response to the revolutionary nationalism that arose in Germany as a, quote, reaction to the Napoleonic invasion, unquote. His use, this King Frederick William, his use of Hegel was very concrete. Hegel was assigned the, quote, urgent task of taming the revolutionary nationalist religion. Hegel fulfilled this task in the spirit of Pareto's advice to take advantage of sentiments, not wasting one's energies in futile efforts to destroy them, unquote. He tamed nationalism, says, continuing with Karl Popper, not by outspoken opposition, but by transforming it into a well-disciplined Prussian authoritarianism, unquote. And you can read the full quote from Karl Popper, not just in Revealing Division, you can go to volume 2 of The Open Society and Its Enemies, but I also include a long excerpt that includes that quote in Revealing Division, which you can download as a PDF. So whence this sudden obsession with taxonomy linked with historical progression? According to V. Gordon Shield, Man Makes Himself, who cites a Professor Bury, the idea of progress was itself a novelty entirely foreign to medieval or ancient writers on history. Unquote. Martin Bernal ties it to the project to rewrite the origins of classical civilization. But why? And quote, here's a quote from Martin Bernal, whose book, Black Athena, The Afro-Asiatic Roots of Classical Civilization, The Fabrication of Ancient Greece from 1785 to 1985, definitely needs to be included on our list of essential books. I just mentioned that because I neglected to the last one we discussed in a previous show. Books that we absolutely need to expose hidden power. Quote from Martin Bernal, "By the middle of the 18th century, a number of Christian apologists were using the emerging paradigm of progress with its presupposition that later is better to promote the Greeks at the expense of the Egyptians. These strands of thought soon merged with two others that were becoming dominant at the same time, racism and romanticism. This racism pervaded the thought of Locke, Hume, and other English thinkers. Their influence and that of the new European explorers of other continents was important at the University of Göttingen, founded in 1734 by George II, Elector of Hanover and King of England, and forming a cultural bridge between Britain and Germany. It is not surprising, therefore, that the first academic, quote-unquote, work on human racial classification, which naturally put whites, or to use his term, Caucasians, at the head of the hierarchy, was written in the 1770s by Johann Friedrich Blumenbach, a professor at Göttingen. The university pioneered the establishment of modern disciplinary scholarship. By the end of the 18th century, progress had become a dominant paradigm. Dynamism and change were valued more than stability. I would argue my comment, however, that this value was strictly utilitarian, i.e., propagandistic. The budding social engineers could not help but see that the only way to realize Plato's dream was to divest us of our certainty, our security, our earth. And again, thank you, Martin Bernal. Black Athena, The Afro-Asiatic Roots of Classical Civilization, Volume 1, The Fabrication of Ancient Greece, from 1785 to 1985. And so he's obviously talking about ideology. And this is another good example he just showed us of power's MO and fundamental dishonesty from the get-go. It pawns its defects on us, chief among them its violence and racism, and in exchange, see, quote-unquote, seizes the credit for our innovation and creativeness.